This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Jason Goff. I'm joined by my teammates Casey Johnson, Rob Schaefer, and Tony Gill. Coming up on the show, we'll discuss the Bulls versus Lakers and what that was all about. Lowry and Zach after that game and going forward. And we remember Kobe Bryant, who died a year ago today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, so what are we going to talk about? It's going to be outdated by the time it's posted.
Right. Hey, listen, I was definitely about to come in here and be like, all right, fellas, dance. Because we're going to talk. Well, we should acknowledge the fact that Rob Schaefer and the Wendell Carter Jr. to start camp was fortified more so by Daniel Gafford doing his best Bubba Wells impersonation.
He's cut it for the record, yeah.
I was sitting there watching the game like, how many fouls does he get? And then I realized it was only four at the time. But I'm like, every time I looked up, me and Kendall be talking about something, next thing you know, Daniel Gafford got a foul. I'm like, all right. Like, you can see it in Lowry's face, too. Lowry's like, hey, man, I don't want to stick this motherfucker all night. Like, Anthony Davis was like, oh shit. Anthony was gonna go hard anyway, but Anthony Davis is like, wait a minute, the big man has foul trouble and the other guy gets to stick me for the rest of the game. I bet.
I was like, after the first couple fouls, I was like, yep, I think I saw enough. Let's go Wendell.
I will say, beyond them being good teams, this is two straight opponents with some matchup issues for the Bullies. Obviously the Lakers are just so big, and now the Celtics have the opportunity to play small and athletic. And it's just, I think you might see a lot of Thad Young in Monday's game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking Otto, too, just because of the wings. Like, I think this is Tatum's first game back. So if they go – I don't even know who they'll start. This is so funny how outdated this is all going
to
be.
I'm about to say, what are you doing right now?
Yeah, like, we can't even get in the weeds.
Yeah, you guys doing the Back to the Future podcast? Like, y'all are opening the doors for everyone to call us idiots for the next 2 days. Like, and there's going to be no game. People are going to be going back and listening to this like, see, I knew them dudes is idiots. Like, Jason Tatum's going to have like 8 points and it's going to be like, I knew those guys didn't know basketball.
What's evergreen?
Rob, generally I will say, I'll call you on an idiotic comment in general, in the sense that, I mean, Otto Porter Jr. can never play major minutes because he'll like break down the next day.
Yeah. Well, he gets the whole, but that's to the point. He gets till Saturday off this time. Go back to that.
Yeah, Rob is negotiating with Otto's body. That's hilarious to me. He's talking to Otto's back like, all right, little fella.
We just talked to Otto at Shootaround, and someone asked him if he was on board with the plan to rest in the second of back-to-backs. You know, he played in that first back-to-back and then had the flare-up, and then ever since then he's been shelved in the next two second games of back-to-backs. And Otto just kind of said, like, hey, I'm just doing whatever the trainer's ready staff says. Yeah. So, you know, Otto's kind of, you know, he's gotten to the point in his career where he's just on cruise
control. Otto's a go-with-the-flow kind of dude.
What's that?
Otto's a go-with-the-flow kind of guy.
Exactly. I was going to say cruise control, go-with-the-flow. Yeah. You know, he's doing what's best for his body and for the team. And, you know, the paychecks come every 2 weeks. So, God bless him, man, you know. So,
what scared y'all about that Lakers game?
Oh, that's a good question. I will say I think what scared me the most was two things. One micro, one macro. The micro would be that Patrick Williams until the very end when it was kind of out of the question, to me, is starting to show that he's coming back to earth a little bit, which is not – I'm not being critical, but that was – you know, he did not play well in Charlotte. He did not play well at the start of the Lakers game. He's a 19-year-old rookie. I think it just – what was so impressive about the start to his season was that there was none of those blips or drops off. So we were starting to expect him to just be, oh, yeah, Patrick's got this. And the fact that he's kind of showing that he's coming back to earth at both ends, quite frankly, you know, it stood out to me, number one. And then number two, just – how, I mean, we knew how far the Bulls are away from competing with the elite, but, you know, they just, they, you know, as great of a season as Zach LaVine is having, he's not on the level of an Anthony Davis or LeBron James, and that's their best player. So not only do they not have one of those guys, they don't have two of those guys. So it just, I don't know, in real time, it just kind of jumped out. It just kind of slapped me in the face, but that is a great talking point. So we should.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to, I'll do a micro and a more zoomed out one too.
I want to hear yours, Jason, because that's a great question.
Yeah. The micro one, I think Lowry going 0 for 5 from 3. A lot of those looks were clean, was a little bit concerned. And this is something where, and Billy Donovan has said that he's still kind of working his way back conditioning wise from the long layoff. So, you know, again, I'm not being overly critical here, but he's sneakily down to 30% from 3 since coming back from protocol. You know, you knew he wasn't going to shoot 48% from 3 all season. But if that tapers back off to being around the league average line or below, it could take a little bit of a wind out of the Lowry kind of hot early season start sales. And that's without, you know, going into all the stuff on the defensive end where, you know, Billy Donovan starts that game with Gafford on Anthony Davis. He tries out Lowry and Thad Young on him throughout the game. And just they just had no answer for a guy like that. So that's a bigger picture problem. Another bigger picture problem, and Casey, you touched on it in your post-game column the night of that game, was just the degree to which this team, as great as the offense has been, struggles with physicality and length. And just when you have a championship caliber defense like the Lakers, I don't think any of us expected them to necessarily go in there and win that game. But when the offensive progress kind of stalls and the offense stagnates, Billy Donovan talked about this after the game, just the way to beat when you're outmatched from a size and physicality standpoint, the way to beat that is to kind of outsmart defenses with cutting and ball movement and player movement. That's something that, you know, he's obviously preached throughout the season, and they've done, for the most part, a really good job of that. But again, you saw in the big time matchup with the Lakers having pretty much all their big guns there, you saw that kind of regress a little bit. So nobody's ringing alarm bells because they got blown out against the defending champs, right? Like that's not in this grand scheme of the expectations of the season. It's not a huge deal, but certainly a reality check. Certainly a reality check. And yeah, that was the biggest thing, is just kind of watching how the offense adapts and kind of reacts to those big time defensive challenges like that. I'll be interested to see, because when it's humming, it's easy to say that, oh yeah, we're moving the ball better, we're shooting better. But when that all kind of regressed, you kind of saw the whole thing kind of implode a little bit. So again, second night of back-to-back defending champs, but that is something, a little bit of a half a red flag for me. That was really
Yeah. And the other thing too, I think at this point, like people, if they come to listen to this podcast, they kind of respect our opinion. So they know that we don't have to couch anything. We're not saying anything. The sky's falling. We don't have to press panic buttons. Like, we don't have to waste any more words on, you know, we're not saying this, we're not saying this. If you can understand the nuance and the context that we speak with, you know, I hope we speak with when it comes to these basketball discussions about this team, then you understand that, right? So we're just wasting your time by telling you, oh, well, you know, we're not saying this. What we're saying is very clear. What I'm about to say, I think, should be clear. You know, Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor's fight going into it, I thought that Dustin Poirier, if he fights his best, he can beat Conor McGregor. If Conor McGregor fights his best, Dustin Poirier can't beat him. And the Bulls' level is, if a really, really good team plays their absolute best, this team has issues. And that's where we're going to, like, the fun converting into the serious is going to happen at some point, right? This team is supposed to be a serious contender at some point. So the fun is happening now, but there are certain nights where we see what the serious looks like. And the Los Angeles Lakers, who are waiting in your city for you to come back after a second night, like, that was a true test of what this thing is. You know, people talk about measuring stick games between players and all that. Nah, to me, the measuring stick is your ass came home and they were waiting for you. You were tired. You both knew what time the game was going to start, and one team had the guy that wasn't there last time that gave you so much confidence because you competed against them, right? Like, that to me is the recalibration. I think it's necessary in relationships. I think it's necessary in industry where you kind of find out like, oh, okay, this is where we're at with it. The Los Angeles Lakers gave the ball to one player for the entire first half of a game, and the Bulls had nothing they could do about it, right? And whether like, I don't want to talk about body language and all these other things. All I know is there needs to be some punchback guys. And in that instance where you're looking at the first half of 33 points, that team kind of gave up on each other. Like, all that stuff that we talk about with ball movement and how they're supposed to play, when things get active and things get tough, you kind of revert back to what you really are. And they're still not there yet. And that's what we saw against the Lakers, because
they had six assists in that first half. Yeah,
that's what completely. I'm saying.
Completely.
In the moments that we celebrated the 30 assist games and the Zach 9 assists, 7 6 6, guess what? The champions came in here and was like, this is who we are. Show us who you are. And in that moment, even if it's not who you are, you showed them something. You showed them that it's time for us to start playing ISO ball. Nobody's moving. Defensively, their spacing – I'm sorry, their floor balance was horrible. You know, I love seeing the LeBron James over-the-head throws to Anthony Davis. Kevin Love used to do that to him in Cleveland. I love seeing those outlets. Every single one of them happened because of poor floor balance. Every single one. There's nobody that should be getting beat down the there's no big, right, that should be getting just that washed down the court by Anthony Davis. So all that cute, cuddly stuff that we saw for the week prior, that's cool, but this counts too, right? Because we can't talk that matchup that we're looking forward to and measuring stick game stuff, and then when they get their asses beat, say, oh, this team's just trying to grow. Which one is it? Right. So if we're going to hold them to the standards and the accountability that we'd like to hold them to when they do well, because there's accountability and success too. Like, when they do well, we talk about it like, yeah, look at Zach, 28-7-9, those numbers. But when that team came out with their one star didn't even play, LeBron James didn't break a sweat. OK, so it's not alarm bells. It's not panic buttons. It's just a reset. And it's an understanding of what this team is right now, right?
And to Rob's point, and this was before the good offensive vibe started rolling, but to Rob's point, so when you think of elite defenses, another one you think of is the Bucks, right? And in that Bucks game, the Bulls just literally succumbed to the choke down nature of that defense. Yep. They stopped cutting, they stopped moving the ball. And that's what, to Rob's point, and what I wrote in my post-game column that I asked Billy about post-game, is that's the micro alarming aspect, is when you face an elite defense, you've actually got to take what all that stuff that works against the Charlottes and the fun games and take it to another level to even have a chance. And instead they regress in that department and they kind of gave up on the cutting and just kind of succumbed to the physicality. That's it. I mean, those defensive rotations of the Lakers are just something to behold.
And their verticality too. Is just
And then they're long and big, exactly. And strong. So yeah.
And they got, like, I remember the first time I got a chance to see, well, I was in Atlanta when the Hawks drafted Dennis Schroeder, right? And I used to have to go to Phillips for my pregame show. I do my show from Phillips, but I get there a few hours beforehand, and I'd watch Quinn Snyder every single day work with Dennis Schroeder, right? And he'd work with him, not just on the offensive stuff and pick and roll stuff, but he'd also have him out there going through certain defensive drills and visualizing things, because the moment he was drafted, dudes in that organization was like, this is Rondo. And I'm like, all right, we'll see. We'll see. And the length, the size of the hands, like the defensive understanding that young man has, like, they have the head of a snake where, LeBron kind of plays that center field in their zone or in their defensive coverages. And of course, Anthony Davis is the rim protector. But that dude, several times during that game, got back out to multiple shooters. And I'm sitting there like, if they can do that on the perimeter, you know what they're going to do in the corners and in the paint. But if they can do that on the perimeter, man, like, I was talking to somebody yesterday, I think they're better than they were last year. And that's before the buyout market happens.
I agree.
I agree. Yeah. And they're especially a better regular season team. I mean, we still don't know kind of how the availability stuff throughout the season is going to go. Right. But certainly Schroeder and Trez, who didn't have the greatest game last night, but the first game against the Bulls killed him. Those are two signings in the regular season that allow you, as you said, for LeBron to kind of like not break that sweat, but then they can kind of carry on a night-to-night basis. I love the Schroeder-Rondo comparison, by the way. They move at the same speed with the ball in their hands too. Like you kind of, if you silhouetted the two of them, there's a little bit of that similarity there. I've always loved that comparison. I remember when he came out, he was German Rondo. That was like the draft comparison.
And no one knew how to pronounce his name, including people in the organization.
Yeah.
did anybody get like, the first thing I thought about was, oh crap, this is farther away than I thought in terms of like when they're going to be like championship ready.
Yeah.
Because again, we've made,
how far did you think it was?
Here's what it was.
Tony sees things in people and he eventually gets let down.
See, like, we made mention of this, and we haven't, obviously there's future podcasts to dive into it fully, but I instantly start thinking about the money that's coming up and the solidifying of this roster that's coming up with Zach and Larry specifically. And I was like, okay, the Lakers have two max guys. You're about to give one of those max slots to Zach.
Maybe. He's not
them.
Yeah,
maybe. And I was like, oh, crap, what's going to happen the next few years? And that's the instant thought as that game was going on. Like, that's when I started to feel like this is more complicated than I originally thought it was going to be.
It's hard to put together. Hey, man, you know how many great players don't have championships for that reason? Right? And we're talking about guys who are trying to crack all-star teams, man. Like, this is, you know – like, I think in this city especially, we don't really respect how hard it is because we've seen it and we saw it in like a ridiculous amount, right? Yeah. Like, because I'm 40, right? So when I was 11 years old, the Bulls started to go to the finals every year until I got out of high school, pretty much, right? Like, there are people who are sitting around waiting for that first championship and all the different iterations of teams they have to root for along the way. There's a base, like, there's a foundation of winning that fans my age have, but I also think there's an understanding that they lack too, because Michael Jordan ruined a lot of careers. There are a lot of towns and a lot of cities and a lot of organizations that should have more championships than they have because of him. So now that you're, like, we're the Cavs and we're the Pistons and we're, you know what I mean? Like, we're Utah. Those teams. Right.
Utah had two Hall of Famers and lost three championships.
Ooh. That's why I'm
that's why I hate the debate of, you know, who is good enough to be the best player on a championship team, because it becomes this debate of like, well, if you haven't done it, then obviously you're not good enough to that. But like, you know, I think Charles Barkley is the name that immediately comes to mind. Was Charles Barkley not good enough to be the best player on a championship team? Like, of course he was. It just didn't happen to happen. I think that way about, there are guys in this era that are still up for debate a little bit, but like, I feel that way about James Harden. Like, I'm like, just because it hasn't happened doesn't mean that he's not good enough to be that player.
Well, you're a Celtics fan, Rob. Like, let's for real. Ray Allen and Paul Pierce were really, really good players, all-stars. Like, you know, Ray Allen was one of my favorite. Milwaukee Bucks Ray Allen is the Ray Allen that I wish kids knew. Right? Yeah. They know Miami Ray Allen. They know Boston a little bit. Boston Ray Allen. Milwaukee, Jesus Shuttlesworth Ray Allen. Like, all the stuff you saw in the movie was happening on NBA floors with Vin Baker and Terrell Brandon. But guess what? Ray Allen was just another all-star. All of a sudden, the Celtics and Danny Ainge go holler at, you know, go holler at Kevin McHale and the boys over there in Seattle and fleece everybody. And they have three players, right, that have been questioned their entire careers. And all of a sudden, they have a triumvirate that's ready to win a championship. So, yeah, like, is Zach LaVine the dude that's going to be hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy in 3 years? I don't think so. But can Zach LaVine be the dude that, one, helps you get there? I believe so. Two, can he be the guy that helps you get the person that helps you get there? I believe so as well, right? But this whole thing, like you said, like, we look at, and I blame Jordan, to be honest with you, because post-Michael Jordan, championship or bust became kind of a thing that I didn't experience as a kid. Like, I didn't look at Bernard King and some of these dudes as a kid like, man, don't want them on my team. No championships yet. You know, like, I don't. Every player is flawed, apparently, until they win a championship. And if Zach LaVine ain't your cup of tea, I'm not mad at you. Like, there are things that I see in Zach still that I'm like, eh, that could be. And you know what I ask myself? So let's base this conversation right here. Is Zach LaVine's turnovers, because the assist numbers and the vision, you know, it's there. But when we talk about the turnovers and him being lead ball handler, because we're going to have to start talking about Zach playing with a real point guard at some point. And I think we've already started that conversation here on this podcast. But I think, you know, as Bulls fans start to watch this more, is it a function of vision, film study, usage, like his high turnover numbers this season? As the usage has increased while they're trying to figure out what Kobe is, what do you think it is when it comes to the other parts of Zach's game that have to be refined, and do you think they can be refined?
You want that one, Casey? I have an idea. I don't know. I think it's obviously a multi-layered conversation that we'd have to get pretty deep on. I think the simplest, or maybe the most, the factor that jumps out the most to me is just the amount of defensive attention he gets. And even when the Bulls right now are performing at a much higher level, top to bottom, really offensively, than they have in some time, Zach just gets so much of the ball pressure that teams will employ. So much of those traps, those blitzes, those double teams are coming in his direction. And to me, I think the steps as a facilitator and the efficiency with which he's scoring with are like profound, like really kind of like major leap level stuff to kind of elite territory in terms of those two aspects of his game. But it's just hard when you are such the epicenter of what your team does offensively, that it is a reminder, Jason, to your point, that this guy is probably optimized alongside either that kind of elite true point guard ball handler or a front court creator that can kind of be the hub of your offense. Like, you think of him in a situation, and I'm not even talking trade, I'm just thinking like literally drop Zach LaVine on this roster and he's optimized, like playing off of a guy like a Jokic or LeBron or a Joel Embiid or, you know, someone along those lines. That's probably where he's optimized, probably not as the like epicenter, you know, front and center piece of your offense as the ball on his hands all the time. But he's showing again, like we've talked about on this podcast before, that point guard background that he has is something that is still very much embedded in him and that he has in his bag of tricks. And it's coming out this year more than ever, but the turnovers are just a reminder of kind of what his optimal situation is. And as much as he's able to thrive in the situation he's in right now, the optimal scenario is probably just as that secondary creator that can kind of move around off ball, be absolutely deadly as a cutter slasher and kind of catch and shoot guy, and then also take on the primary creation duties for stretches of a game and do it, you know, as well as anybody, but not have to be leaned on to the extent that he has been with the Bulls the last couple of years. So that's probably, I mean, that's the factor that jumps out most to me is just the defensive attention he gets. But I'd be curious what you think of that, Casey.
The reason why I wanted a second before I answered was I actually wanted to quickly look up his usage because I was like, there's no way it's down.
It's
yeah, I was gonna say because last year was ridiculous. So last year was at 31.7% and this year's at 29.4%. However, his turnovers are up from 3.4 to 4.2. So this is a problem. And you know, it's funny because before, like we were talking before, Jason, about how if we're going to celebrate like the good moments, we've got to hold them accountable to the slip ups.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're all celebrating Zach's, you know, willingness to pass and trying to make the right play and advancements in decision making, et cetera. However, those two, you know, numbers say a little bit otherwise. I mean, there are still some times, and I as much as anybody, recognize how much defensive attention Zach draws. And I think for the most part, he's done a good job trying to read those different defensive coverages. But there's still some times where he just has lazy, inexcusable turnovers. There's that one in the Oklahoma City game where he just dribbled off his foot and Lou Dort dove for the loose ball in front of the bench. They called timeout. They got a dunk at the other end. And, you know, I know there's a lot of responsibility on Zach's plate. And I also think, you know, this is almost excuse making for him, but I think he is trying harder at the defensive end. So not only does he have this huge amount of responsibility on his plate offensively, but defensively, I think he's working harder. So maybe there's a little bit of element to that. But his usage is down and his turnovers are up. So that's not a good combination for the Bulls.
No, he is a guy that I think, like, there are guys that are sprinkled around the league who people watch, you know, every once in a while, and you think, man, you know, why aren't more people talking about this guy? Zach LaVine is getting talked about now. So now with that comes the microscope. And with that, you know, people are going to start to examine, okay, why is that the case? Or why, you know, like you mentioned, is it the usage? Is it unrealistic expectation? Are there certain parts of a person's game that you should understand? This is the cap. This is the ceiling. This is what you should expect. This is what it's going to be for the foreseeable future, because he's in the moment now where he's played enough basketball where you got a decent sample size of what his career is and what it can be, right? Like, I don't see some astronomical jump getting ready to happen numbers wise, but for the feel part, I think there is a jump that he can take, because I think he is a vibrant basketball player. And I mean that, like, he doesn't strike me as a basketball dummy. So if it's him getting lost in the sauce when he's not on the ball, or if it's him, you know, taking his mind off of things, like, you got to be laser. The great ones are laser focused for an entire game. And then when you see them have the slip ups, they are hard on themselves about it, and not just showy hard. Right. But like, you, me seeing that you're hard on yourself about an error is that it's not replicated. And there are times where, like you mentioned, there'll be some head-scratching jump passes, or there'll be some head-scratching things where I've seen him find himself in the corner more times than I'm like, I'd like. And I'm like, man, you know, get yourself out of there, right? You got two defenders over there in the baseline and the sideline. Like, those are the things where I think that when Zach takes those steps, then we'll see his – not his numbers jump, because I truly believe Zach LaVine is probably a better player when not asked to score 30 points a game. Right. And that's just, I mean, that's obvious basketball stuff. Everybody would like to play with better players. Right. And I think Zach is one of those guys as well, but he's in the situation that he's in, which is why. And I haven't harped on it this year, and I've actually sung his praises more than I've critiqued him harshly. But everything that you see, whether it be that Lakers game, whether it be the Bucks game, any game where a team is more talented than the Bulls, more experienced than the Bulls, you know, their coach is more familiar with the roster, whatever the case may be. Every game that happens like that, I look at Lowry Marketing and go, man, if they don't have to call weak side duck-ins, or you don't have to have open threes off of driving kicks, like, scream for the damn ball. Like, go out there and understand. Like, Kobe White should not be the second leading scorer. I mean, not second leading scorer, but like, in seemingly in importance in this offense, it seems like Kobe is the second most important person. Meanwhile, Lowry's just getting his 19 because he's that talented. And I want that talented part to stop, and because he has to go out there and get it part to start. And I think that's what we're waiting on, because Lowry Markkanen gets 19, 20 points, and I look up and I go, damn, I don't remember a time when he was like, I have the matchup, give me the ball, you know? And it's not his personality. I understand that. But if something changes where he is understanding of how important he is and how important his aggression is, I think Zach takes off. I think it makes it easier for Kobe. I think the rotations, you know, the bench looks a lot better, because you don't have to get him out of there during certain small lineups. Like, I just think that I thought at the beginning of the season, I still think it, Lowry Marketing is the most important player on this team. And when this team is going to play well in the future, if he's a part of it, it's going to be because he is not just a factor by numbers with 19 and 8, which is great. But I'm just talking about when I need aggression from a big, I want it to be him. And I think Zach feels the same way. I think Kobe feels the same way. It's just, when we see Anthony Davis and LeBron James running around out there, we see the other team, 6'9" and up guys, being aggressive and being as talented as they are. I think Lowry has that same kind of – he can have those same kind of vibes. It's just, you know, it doesn't happen as often as I would like to. Like the game before the Lakers game, like, Lowry was aggressive. Right. And I like it when he's aggressive. He's going to miss shots. Kendall hates the fact that he shoots threes. I'm not on that train as much, because I do think he's a decent enough shooter. He hadn't shown to be as good a shooter as I thought he would be. But I don't hate the fact that he shoots threes. I love the fact that he's actually being aggressive and driving with the ball a little bit more than I remember. But I still think there's a key turn still waiting to happen. It's just, you're up against it now because you got to pay him.
Yeah. And we were talking about that a little bit off air after the last podcast we took, Casey. I think it was, can't remember exactly. It was the one that we did after after a game. But just the I feel like kind of a meathead saying it, but just the imposing of will onto a game, for Lowry. Like, that's what you want to see. You want to see his fingerprints on a bunch of different areas of it. You want to see, again, like, obviously his offensive utility, if he's not shooting threes and not shooting them at an above average clip, his offensive utility is not what it needs to be. So he definitely needs to shoot those, but the shot distribution, I think, is something I always look for too. Like, there was a game, I think it was against Houston, where he took 11 shots and, or he took 12 shots and 11 of them were threes. Like, that's not what you want. You want the 9 and 8 splits where he's taking 17 or 18 shots a game and it's about even. So that's definitely something to look for. I was actually looking, cause on the Zach usage conversation, I was looking through some numbers a little bit, and his usage is the lowest that it's been in his time as a Bull. Interestingly, this year, his touches are actually up, and Kobe's are obviously up seismically, and his seconds per touch are up from last season to this one, Zach's. So usage is a measure of whether a possession ends in a shot attempt, a turnover, or a foul. So just because his usage is down doesn't mean that the ball isn't in his hands a lot, and the facilitating feeds into that, because a pass or a possession that ends in a potential assist or an assist doesn't get counted towards usage, but you still were at the center of that possession at one point. So that was one thing. And then in that, I stumbled into Lowry's touches actually last year to this year, we're talking an early sample size here, are actually not tremendously different in terms of just the amount of times that he's actually touching the ball. He's using his touches more efficiently, he's shooting a lot better, and the numbers look better for now, but it's just something to monitor. You just don't want to see that early season spark swoon. And, you know, to the point we were making earlier in the podcast, maybe everybody pops off against the Celtics. They beat the Celtics by 25 with Tatum, Kemba, and Jaylen Brown. We all look stupid tomorrow, but these are all things that a loss like the Lakers loss, when you do this reset, like, this is all the stuff that you reset to when you go, okay, wait, what are we really looking at here? Let's actually go a layer deeper. So yeah, that's just kind of the point we're at right now.
And he's played well since coming out of the health and safety protocol. So I don't want to act like Lowry's been out here being a bomb or something. Definitely. I'm looking forward to whatever the next level is, and I don't want it to be with another team.
Well, like, when you say looking forward to the next level, that leads into what I wanted to say about every time Bulls Celtics play. I remember writing at my previous shop, and I know other people wrote it too. If you did the 2017 redraft, Lauri Markkanen and Jason Tatum, who you got? And now, I mean, talk about the next level. Jason Tatum has gone there.
Yeah.
Lauri has gone there in stretches enough for us to talk about it as a possibility, but not to the level that Jason Tatum is. But that was a legit conversation when Lowry was having that, you know, dominant month in his second season. Is if you did the redraft, Donovan Mitchell would be there. Jason Tatum would be there. Lauri Markkanen would be there. Now you probably have Jason Tatum a little bit higher than
Lowry. A little bit. You know what it is, KC? I want the Lowri Markkanen bad shot conversation to start. You know why you don't get that? Because he doesn't take bad shots. You know why he doesn't take bad shots? Because he's not aggressive as I'd like him to be. I want Lowri Markkanen to start taking some bad shots, man. Like, I want Lowri Markkanen to get the ball somewhere that he's comfortable and have two people in front of him and say, damn it, I'm going to the rim and this is going up. If you want the ball, go get it off the glass. Like, that's – and I know that's not his personality, right? Like, if we put certain souls into certain players, then they'd be the greatest of all time. But I understand that. But, man, like, there'd be moments where – like, even in the dunk he had against the Lakers – they were down by 20. I was like, hell yeah. I'm like, that's what you're supposed to do. I'm the dude screaming at the television at the crib. You know what I mean? I'm like, wait a minute. They're down by 20. And then they messed around and got real close. I'm like, oh, don't do this to me.
I was going to ask you a couple days later. I was going to ask both of you how much stock you give into. Oh, they came out of the half and they punched them back a little bit, got it within 14. Because they got some credit for that in the moment that night, because it did seem for a glimmer of a moment it's going to be interesting for a second. A couple days later, I'm like, nah.
Nah, the Lakers stopped.
Lakers took their foot off the gas. 4 minutes left in the third quarter, they had like 8 points in the third quarter, and it was like, we'll just wait for this switch to flip back.
LeBron finished the game in shower shoes, okay? He was wearing slides on the bench.
100%. No, 100%.
That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. Well, I mean, like, the team – I did a Charlotte radio interview this morning as we're taping here. What's today? On Monday morning. And they started asking me about, like, what we saw out of the Bulls when the Hornets faced them. I'm like, dude – I'm not thinking about that Hornets game anymore. I just saw this against the Lakers. So what I think about is how they're going through this, right? This process of, okay, look at that, three in a row. We're making steps. We're making strides. Like, when do you think Billy Donovan, because you guys have talked to him, when do you think Billy Donovan presses those buttons? Does he do it after a loss like that? Or does he do it after the three-game win streak? If you'd have to kind of summarize his temperature checking, you know, like how he does with his players.
What do you mean by presses those buttons?
In terms of like when teams are riding high, there are certain coaches who don't say a word about it. Certain coaches who, you know, aggrandize them. Certain coaches who say, yeah, but you know what? We still got this. And then when they get their asses spanked, certain coaches throw it out, or certain coaches go, yep, this is what I was trying to tell you about. Which one do you think Billy Donovan is?
I think he's my sense, and, you know, obviously we haven't got to know him on the level that you usually do because you're not around him personally on a daily basis. But my sense is, and having talked to people about him in Oklahoma City, his tenure there, is that he's pretty even-keeled and he's pretty direct about just – I don't think he celebrates highs or dwells on lows. I think he just kind of is like, all right, here's what we did right and wrong today. Here's what we did right and wrong today following the Laker game. Here's what we did right and wrong following the Charlotte game. I mean, that's not to say he's like a robot or automaton
he's
and doesn't have a personality. I just don't think I think he's so direct and so even keel with players that's why you've got them buying in as much as they are and respect him as much as they do, because he just treats them the same and just treats them like adults, you know? So that's my sense, at least.
Yeah. The tone. Yeah. Straightforwardness is the through line from talking to players. And then you just listen to him speak. Like, the tone isn't that much different after a blowout loss versus a win, and not in a bad way. But it's just kind of matter of fact, you know, he's not going to shy away from criticism and he's not going to be afraid to give praise and boost a guy up too. So it's kind of a little bit in the middle there, but
I would say real quick, what the one time that's really jumped out to me is after that second straight home loss to the Pacers. And that was about as pointed as I've seen him. And I remember my post game column from that night, he used the word they a lot. He didn't say we, he said they have to get themselves out of this. And I thought that pronoun usage was very telling. I think he was saying, hey, you know what? You guys have to show some competitive fight here. This is about just, we can't even address like the X's and O's aspect until you bring the competing aspect and, you know, get tired of having your ass kicked. So I think the fact that to me was as strong as I've seen him, but he didn't do it in a like F these guys way. Hey, you know what? They've got to get themselves out of it. He's real, man. He's a realist. He's an accomplished coach who knows how the NBA works. So, you know, we all know it's a players league, and he was reminding us in that day, hey man, you got to, I can't start coaching you until you start not turning the ball over when a guy just stands in front of you.
Hey coach, what do I do when the guy puts his arms out to the side and doesn't move his feet? Should I dribble it off my leg or should I put up a contested three pointer? I'll hang up and listen for your answer, coach.
There you go.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
right, let's get to our points bet segment here, Tone. Help us out here. You and Rob, the masterminds of gambling here on this podcast, have brought your minds together, and we're going to do what is it? Odds for rookie of the year? Is that what we got?
Yep. Do you have the screenshot in front? I can read off the top.
You know I don't. You heard into that lead up that I was fumbling around looking for. You know, and I still didn't get it. So help me out here, Schaefer.
I'll give you the top three. So the odds on favorite right now, from our partner's points bet is to win.
Yeah, ain't so easy now, is it, huh? Yeah, ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun. See what happens when the rider's got to say some shit.
This is like the Bulls playing the Lakers. When you give me the keys to the podcast, you're like, oh, Rob really is pretty far away from being able to.
No. You know what it's like? It's like giving the ball to Denzel for more than 5 minutes at a time. Before we get to, how about Denzel's no-look pass to nobody the other
that
night?
That got deflected. That was unfair. That got deflected. In the Lakers game? It got deflected.
It can still get deflected and not be going to anybody.
All right. I get the Denzel slander. Hey, Tony, I thought that one was a little bit unfair because the Bulls.
Tony, your man Rob is shooting bail for Denzel Valentine. Look at this.
Rookie of the year favorites. Rookie of the year favorites.
Too close to the situation, Rob Schaefer.
Fair enough. Rookie of the year favorites. So we got LaMelo Ball is the odds on favorite, -200. Jason's guy, Tyrese Halliburton, +300. And then James Wiseman rounds out the top three at +1400. The guy of the podcast, Patrick Williams, all the way down, tied with Isaac Okoro for, I don't want to count all these guys, but far down the list at plus 6,600. So Pat Will, they don't have a ton of love for him. I guess if you're feeling the bounce back and that, the fact that he's starting, he'll eventually start to accumulate counting stats. The best value to me, though, out of all these guys is a dude that's a little bit outside the top three, but it's Cole Anthony at +2,200. If you wanted to find kind of that sleeper dark horse kind of guy, he's going to be the starting league guard in Orlando for the rest of the year. Obviously, the shooting splits have been pretty subpar so far. He's not really getting to the rim, which is an issue in terms of his scoring potential. But I think he's 12-4-3 since taking over the starting job there. So maybe he stumbles into some counting stats. And if Orlando surprises, it's at least good value at +2,200 compared to the rest of these guys. But my pick in terms of an actual prediction, leaving odds out, is, Tyrese Halliburton has just, to me, been the most impressive rookie so far. Steadiness. He's going to be the perfect backcourt mate of the future for De'Aaron Fox when they eventually get the keys together. So that would still be my prediction, odds aside. I don't know who exactly is coming for his throne at this point.
My odds on favorite to win rookie of the year early at the quarter poll here is Tyrese Halliburton as well. LaMelo Ball is too feast or famine for my taste, and you saw that in the Bulls match.
And James Borrego's taste.
Yeah. Come on, Ben. Because he got benched in that Bulls game.
This man is taking the longest dump ever at halftime. why is he not back in the game?
played 1 minute in the second half. And obviously showed a couple of those vision passes that make the highlight reels in the first half. But, yeah, he's too feast or famine for my taste. Tyrese Halliburton is my odds on favorite rookie of the year. And then I got to say, James Wiseman is exceeding my expectations.
He's been good.
He's been really, really good. Really, really poised and seems to just get it just in the limited dealings that I've had, talking to people about him, talking to Steve Kerr once about him, just really, really humble and about the work. So, I think those two guys are probably the kind of separating themselves from a overall pretty strong rookie class, particularly with all they're going through. This is an incredibly unprecedented, difficult rookie season for these guys with no summer league, shortened training camp, not having finished your previous college season because of the pandemic. So shout out to these rookies for what they're doing. And then the last thing I'll say quickly about Patrick, he just doesn't have the flashy enough game to me to win.
Yeah,
hardware. He's a steady, just two-way player. That's why he's, tied for 10th in these points bets.
Oh, so you went and counted it.
I counted for you.
The thing about Patrick Williams, if I'm a Bulls fan, though, I do feel pretty good about the return so far when you talk about in 3 to 4 years who's going to be the best dude in this class or one of the best dudes in this class. I would feel pretty good about that if I'm a Bulls fan at this point based on what you've seen so far. But for a short-term award like Rookie of the Year, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I The James Wiseman thing, I'm so glad you mentioned it, KC, because all the people who were, oh, can you trust him since he quit on his team, can eat it. Because everything that I'm getting from the Bay, you know, Marcus Thompson and those guys who are covering him out there, James Wiseman is walking around and making sure that the champions on that team are in his ear, and he is accepting and receiving all of the criticism and all of the applause. Like, Draymond Green, I guess, got caught yelling at him on the floor, and they asked him about it, and he was like, I'm supposed to listen to Draymond. He knows, right? He said Draymond knows their place, so he obviously knows where I'm supposed to be. And a 19-year-old doesn't always have to carry it like that. So, you know, it's a lot of people who like to run you through the what did he do on the college scene ringer. It's like, Nah, I'm cool with James. I'll be good with the 7'1", 250-pound rim runner who can shoot threes and is listening to his vets. I'll be good with that. Looking at it now, there's no way in hell that dude shouldn't have been the first pick in the draft. None. Like, if you were and if that was the worry, get a private investigator. You know what I'm saying? Like sit him down and zoom his face off. You know what I mean? Like, make sure that you know every answer, because watching that dude, and I refuse to watch Kings games if they're not playing the Bulls. It's like seeing what could have been in your relationship life. You know, just, you know what it is? It's seeing your high school sweetheart having a happy family and marriage and you rooting against it. That's what it is every time I see Tyrese Halliburton, because I know how I feel about Pat Williams, but, you know, I also know how I feel about the point guard situation on this team too. I mean, you know, you can be right and be upset that you're right. And I think that's how I feel right now. But yeah, I mean, Pat Williams doesn't have that flashy game. When do you think the first 30-point game that Pat Williams is going to have is? Do you think it's going to be this year? Because he has to – you got to start knocking on some of those numbers at the end of the season to even get into that kind of conversation. And I don't think he has the personality nor the – I won't say the confidence, but, you know, there's been a few games where I'm like, hey, man, who going to be mad at you on this team? Like, shoot the ball. You are the protected child on this team. Shoot the ball, man. So I don't think he has that kind of effort in his system yet, because he's still learning. And I'm not mad at him, but there's some guys who are ahead of him that have that in their system. Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman at times, you know, Tyrese Halliburton, as we saw in the Bulls game, where in the fourth quarter he was like, wait a minute, I can do whatever I want out here. So, yeah, shout out to PointsBet. Download the app. There's special offers for you at all times. You can bring more excitement to every game watching experience. And I did that off the top of my head, and hopefully Tony thinks it's okay to keep in the podcast. So there it is. on a less happy note, when this podcast drops, it'll be a year to the day that Kobe Bryant passed away, if I'm not mistaken. And Alexa, I'm not talking to you. Turn off. Alexa, turn off. See, they're always listening.
Way to ruin a solemn moment, Alexa.
Hey, man, yeah, right? I mean, come on, Jeff Bezos, what you doing out here? I'm going to start believing in conspiracy theories. All right, so yeah, man, Kobe Bryant, he, you know, we all know how we felt at the time. Some of us still feel that way, because a life that was getting ready, I think, to bloom in its full nature. Didn't get a chance to, because of that horrific, horrific helicopter accident, along with the other lives that were on, the other precious lives that were on that flight with him, including his daughters. You know, for me, and Tony can understand this from a hip hop sense, and Rob, you too, because you know, you're down with the community. You know, KC, I still got to throw the versus action at you at the end of every podcast just to mess with you. But all this kind of like nastiness of this last year and a half or so started for me with Nipsey Hussle. When Nipsey Hussle was murdered, I was like, yo, it hit me in a way that I didn't think it would. And I think understanding and realizing my own mortality and being a new dad and all these things, like, things touch you differently than when you're younger. And I had an appreciation, naive, and how, I won't say careless, but like how much I didn't value those moments hitting me as hard as they did. Like, we've all seen people pass away that were famous And you're like, oh, that sucks. That's no good. But I remember how I felt when Tupac died. I remember how I felt when Biggie died. I remember how I felt when Nipsey died. And when Kobe died, I felt that way. Like there was a sickness, you know, because somebody that that provides art in that way, you know, you feel like you've been blessed to see it and to get a chance to cover them a few times like you guys have. Get a chance to ask him questions and to just, you know, be around that kind of basketball genius and see it. And knowing that there was so much more with the tech companies and the animation companies and all the stuff that he was doing in the LA area and communities surrounding LA for marginalized communities. It's still sad. Couldn't really speak about it today on the interview that I went into in Charlotte because obviously he was drafted there, the draft day trade. It still sucks, man. It's never going to feel okay because of how he was taken from everybody and his family. And to be honest with you, I have a tough time seeing commercials or seeing games. I'm like, there's a meme that I've tweeted out a lot of days, and it's like the first time that I've been okay with like seeing him look at the Olympic scoreboard and doing the what, and you know what I mean? I stayed away from that because that's how I deal with death. It's like I think about it until I have to, and we're gonna have to think about it pod drive. So your thoughts a year later, Casey?
I mean, yeah, there's no way to wrap your brain around it other than to be sad. You connect on it from a lot of levels, professionally and personally, when a person is that legendary in their field. And, you know, all the interviews I've done subsequent to his passing just talked about what you speak to, Jason, is just the sad part. I mean, there's so many sad parts, but one of the saddest parts is just how much was left for him to accomplish. I mean, just, you know, with his post-career, you know, with his intellect and his drive and his smarts and his business sense, there was so much for him. You know, people have said that, you know, I talked to Tom Thibodeau about this, Chip Schaefer about this, you know, Pau Gasol about this. It's like people think that he was going to do things that could help change the world for the better. And so that's the loss at it. You know, I was looking down when you guys were talking. I actually still have like the video from his last game at the United States Center on my phone.
Yeah.
You know, just it was one of those moments you knew, you know, he was having a press conference before every game at every stop. And you just knew his history. So I rolled for a little bit and it's still on my phone. And I haven't looked at it very much because it's just too hard. And then I'll just quickly say from the personal level, I think I've told this story before and not like to equate anything, but that was a Sunday that day that happened. And I remember I coached my younger guys' youth basketball team, and I had gone out to the car before him. We had a game that day, and I when I got to my car, that's when I checked my phone, and that's when the news hit. So in that 45 seconds that I had before my kid got in the car, I had to go, holy F, think about work responsibilities, think about how I'm going to try to address this with my own kid, and then also think about going to coach a youth basketball game while also processing that Kobe just died doing the very same thing that I'm about to do, albeit drive a car as opposed to get into a helicopter. Yeah. He's going to take his daughter to youth basketball, you know, and I'm going to take my son to youth basketball. So that was the personal thing that was just, I remember, you know, I was just straight with my kid like I always am, but I remember being very emotional when telling him. And just saying, hey, man, you know, we're going to have to process this and just go do our best to honor Kobe by going and playing this game and do the best we can. And I'm going to coach as best I can. And you know, and it's youth basketball. I'm not like, right. You know, but yeah, I said, and I said, you play it as best you can. And that's how we can honor Kobe and those who were lost in that helicopter crash.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Rob?
Yeah, it's just sobering. Just you forget about it. And then there are just little things like, for me, because Casey, you just had that interview with Chip that's up on our website right now. And I found myself on, like, for example, his basketball reference page, Kobe's, like fact checking something for that or something. And the fact that it just has like the stamp there that's died on this date, like there are just little things like that take you back to, for me, it was in TweetDeck seeing the TMZ article. Like you could close your eyes and see it because you just like you don't think it's real. Because I remember they were the first ones that had it. So it takes you back kind of to that moment of like sharp intake of breath. your palms like sweat and you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe that, that's happening. So that's just sobering to kind of be back in that headspace. You guys eloquently put the off the floor impact that he was kind of poised to have in the later stage of his life. You lose a life that's even more kind of at its inception in terms of Gianna, the seven other people that were on that helicopter, in turn, there were parents, there were other youth basketball players, like so many lights just kind of snuffed out there in a way that is still just hard to believe. And then Jason, the way you talked about Nipsey and the way you talk about Pac, like just the way, just for me, cause I'm of a younger generation, like Kobe is just someone that you don't want to say helped raise you, but just was there for so much of my basketball fandom growing up. That's like a piece of your childhood gone. Yeah. I felt that way recently, you know, Mac Miller dying, that there's another one that kind of had that same resonance. You mentioned that I grew up a Celtics fan earlier on the podcast, Tommy Heinsohn a couple months ago. Like these are little things that they just like kind of take little chips out of you to a degree when they hit. And Kobe is one like that. It's crazy that it's been a year. It's wild. I mean, absolutely wild. This year has been, you know, it's all at once kind of gone by in a flash and felt like a decade at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I could kind of close my eyes and it feels like it was yesterday. Cause I remember we went and we taped the podcast. I think it was the next day.
Yes,
in our studio kind of at NBC Sports Chicago, just as a reminder of how different the world is now than then. I think Jason, that's the first time we ever met each other in person. Like there's a lot of emotion wrapped up in that event, going to the Advocate Center and talking to guys like Zach and Thad about their reflections on Kobe. Jim Boylan, we talked to him. I remember tears in his eyes, like just such an emotional day top to bottom, or kind of event top to bottom over the multiple day span of it. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of just hits you like a truck. That's all I can really say about it when you hit an anniversary like this one.
Yeah, there's certain instances that either I was too young or not a part of that scene to understand the significance of it, you know, whether it be John Lennon or, you know, JFK or, you know, JFK Jr. Like, you know, there's just some things where it's like, was it Rob? No, yeah, it's Rob Kennedy as well. I mean, like, there's just some things that older folks have seen that I haven't experienced, but I know exactly how they felt. You know, and I'm not equating an athlete to politicians or civil rights leaders or activists. It's just like you mentioned, whatever background you're from, you know, if you enjoy basketball, Kobe Bryant for two decades was a part of it. Whether you cheered for him, you rooted against him, whether you hated his guts, whether you thought that he was trying to bite Mike style and, you know, he almost completed it, like whatever it was, Kobe was right there and he wasn't afraid to be whatever you thought he was. And that's what I appreciate. There's a certain freedom that he moved with, that I appreciate, you know, it was authentic too, right? Like there's a lot of guys who talk that shit, but aren't really like that. When those cameras and lights go off, you could tell that was him through and through. And, I appreciate that kind of discipline. I appreciate that kind of excellence. And like Casey said, a lot of people around him thinking that was only the first part of his life, you know, like that was, we had a second and third act that we were supposed to see that was taken away from us. That's why I say, fellas, you know, especially in these COVID times and these quarantine times, whatever the restrictions are that you're putting on your life or not putting on your life, these moments that we get a chance to share together, I truly appreciate, because nobody knows the expiration date, man. Right. So we got to do whatever we can until we get there. So for Rob Schaefer, my main man, Casey Johnson, I won't ask Casey what he thought of the Ashanti and Keisha Cole versus. I don't know if his Wi-Fi was acting up. So I won't ask him his thoughts on that. I'll just wait for the next rap battle for him to jump in on. And of course, the greatest digital content producer, you know, a man who has a keen eye for basketball talent and knowing who to root for and who not to root for, Tony Gill. I'm Jason Goff, thanking you so much for listening to whatever this was on the Bulls Talk Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as your smart speaker. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us, because you know you love us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. But until then, as always, take care of each other and be safe.